Everybody, welcome to the Talking Disney Classics podcast, and this is the show where we like to talk about the Disney canon, and it's especially exciting when we get a new entry, and I just realized that my holiday background is on, because it's very festive if you're watching the YouTube videos.
Yeah. Christmas is coming.
But yeah, we are here to talk about the new film Wish, which is their 100th anniversary release. And it's going to be interesting because I have absolutely no idea what Stanford thought of this movie. So this is going to be, fun. And I'm Phil Critter Dragon. Stanford's here.
Hi, how's it going?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you?
You know, I'm doing all right. Thank you. I've been trying to compose my thoughts. Lots to unpack here. Yes. About this movie.
Yeah, I've seen it now twice. I saw the screening, and then I went a second time where I could take notes. This might be a little bit less structured than the typical episode of Talking Disney, because usually I have like my sheets and sheets of notes. And in this case, I have like literally sheets and sheets of notes, but not a spreadsheet of notes like I typically have. So I apologize if it's a little more freeform typical. But yeah, I went a second time today to try to kind of take more notes and also not be quite as tired as I was the first time I saw it. And so, yeah, but it's a movie. So, yes, this is Disney's Wish, and its Wish will follow a young girl named Asha who wishes on a star and gets a more direct answer than she bargained for when a troublemaking star comes down from the sky to join her. And this is directors Chris Buck, Fawn Verschthorn. Apologize about the name.
Yeah, she's got a really gnarly last name. I wish I knew how to pronounce it too. I mean, it's lovely, but it seems like it's, from.
Yeah.
It's like, Dutch or something. It's got
you're incredible. So I apologize. And then writers Jennifer Lee, Allison Moore, Chris Buck, and it stars Ariana DeBose, Chris Pine, and Alan Tudyk. And so, Stanford, overall, what do you think of it?
You know, Rachel, I thought you said it best, but it's just kind of mid-level Disney.
Yeah.
I was happy that they were going for a fairy tale.
Mm-hmm.
And also, always game for a musical. But I think a lot... The majority of the problems for me lie within the script.
Yeah.
And I can't say I love the music either.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe same of it's growing on me. I tried to listen to it a bit. Because I think all of the soundtracks now I was doing on Apple iTunes, but or on Apple Music. But the animation I thought was gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely gorgeous. But I'm having real issues with just kind of the execution of this story.
Yeah, I was kind of hopeful that maybe the second watch I would enjoy it more, because I would be able to sort of pay attention maybe more to those little Easter eggs and other things, but I don't think I did. Mm-hmm. I left this movie the second time thinking I don't ever need to see that movie ever again.
Yeah,
like if I don't need to cover it for something or for some reason, I don't think I'll ever watch it again.
Yeah,
and it's not like awful, but I would always pick a different movie over that.
Yeah.
I would always pick the ones that it's paying homage to over it. Always.
No question. Anytime.
Yes.
I mean, Snow White,
Peter Pan, a little Bambi. Yeah,
I'd pick Frozen and the Lion King over this any day of the week.
Lion King? I don't even
remember. I was just referring to Disney musicals, Disney animated musicals. So sorry, that was a little out of context.
No, you're fine.
But
I was just like, did I miss that reference?
Well, and there might have been one, but
I'm
not sure. But one quick thing that really bugged me was, and maybe if this is just me being uninformed or out of touch, but I was under the impression that the Once Upon a Studio short, even though I know they put it on Disney Plus, was also going to be playing in front of Wish. And it didn't.
Yeah. That was weird. Yeah, so I think it was originally.
It was originally.
And you can keep track of how things are announced and stuff. But then all of a sudden, it was going to be in front of Encanto on ABC. I think the original, even before Disney Plus. I think it was the original first airing, the debut, and they had Kelly Ripa doing the interstitials and whatever, introducing it. And that was very strange because, I mean, I was very surprised, not only because why not have it be something you could promote along with Wish, especially if it's a movie that's going to have a lot of Easter eggs and stuff, but also they've just been distancing themselves from ABC a lot. So it seemed like a very weird choice. To me, I just feel like there's just been very little that's been like branded content on ABC, even less than Disney Channel, which has also been distancing himself. So I thought it was a very surprising choice that they would do it that way.
Yeah. And I think mostly I was just feeling gypped because I'm so glad it's on Disney Plus and I can watch it anytime. Yeah. But I was really looking forward to seeing it on the big screen.
Yeah.
So anyway,
and it's not like Wish is long. It's 95 minutes. They could have easily had, you know, what is it? 5 minutes. It's really short.
Yeah, it's short. It's 5 minutes. It was so that was a huge disappointment for this Disney nut. But anyway, I'll get over it. But maybe. No, I'm kidding. I will get over it.
Yeah.
But it's I'm with you. Not a lot of desire to repeat. There were some children in the screening I went to,
mm-hmm.
you know, some families with young kids, and there was some laughing. But the one comment that really stuck out was during one of the jokes that one of the kids behind me said, "Oh, that's the joke from the preview." And so it's one of those, like, maybe they just put the jokes, you know, that were.
Yeah.
I mean, not that it had
full
of duds, but
so in my short form, in my little YouTube short reaction out of theater reaction, somebody, one of the comments was, "Well, this is not, you're not in the target demographic," was the response. And I wanted to say, like, we had Cal Brunker on, director of the Paw Patrol movies, on this very show, on this very podcast. I've enjoyed both of those. And I'm certainly not in the target demographic for those. There's tons of movies that I can say, okay, like, I mean, I'm not really necessarily in the target demographic for Journey to Bethlehem. I enjoyed that. I'm not an evangelical. I'm not and there's lots of movies that I'm not in the target demographic for that I do end up enjoying. But even if I give into that there is a target demographic for this movie, I don't think that this movie's target demographic is little children. I would not walk away from this movie and be like, that was made for little kids, like I would a Paw Patrol movie, for instance, or Winnie the Pooh or something like that.
Yeah. You know, I'm with you. I don't think that's necessarily a fair criticism that was given to you, because also a real hallmark of a Disney animated classic is that it's really for everybody.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, it plays for the young people as well as the, you know, the old people, the audience.
The argument that I absolutely am the target demographic because I love Disney musicals and I love animation and we have this whole podcast on the Disney canon, like a movie with tons of Easter eggs and all these little things that should be like right up my alley.
Yeah. Yeah.
That should be right up both of our alley.
Yeah.
And I said in my review, I said it honestly reminded me of the Disney Renaissance copycat films made by other studios like Swan Princess.
Mm-hmm.
But I prefer that film over this. Mm-hmm. And I really do think that it kind of had that feel of it, that there just was nothing special about it. It was so bland. So we start out at the beginning where she's walking through Osa's. That song was almost identical to the Family Madrigal song in Encanto. It was so similar.
it really felt like a copycat.
Really did.
You know, I mean, the rhythm of it, you know, and just the whole kind of tone and pacing of it.
Yeah.
And that's what I was thinking. It's like, well, so I was just trying to be like Lin-Manuel Miranda, you know?
Yeah. I thought that this Wish song was very similar to Waiting on a Miracle from Encanto. Very similar to that. I think the biggest difference between this and the last couple Disney canon films is that it actually did have a true villain, and we got a villain song in This Is the Thanks I Get. So I guess, how did you feel that they executed that? What did you think about Chris Pine and Magnifico?
So I was really happy. I know we've talked a lot about this, that there was no, villain reveal that happens. You learn early on in this film that Magnifico is a bad, you know, is a bad dude.
Yeah.
He's the villain. I thought, you know, again, it's the processing, but I thought that Chris Pine was terrific, and I loved the animation, and I did enjoy the homages to previous Disney villains, mm-hmm. particularly like the Wicked Queen from Snow White.
Yes, most.
Ursula, I think there's some Ursula in there, but the and I think you mentioned this to Rachel, but it was almost too one dimensional to, like, you know, not wanting to be too whiny about it.
Yeah,
I did like the third act. The third act seemed, in a lot of ways, kind of classic Disney, where the villain just gets unhinged, you know. Yeah. And I was pretty interesting to me, just because I wasn't quite sure what was going to happen. I mean, I have a happy ending, but I didn't know quite how it was all going to pan out.
Yeah, and I thought it was pretty effective, like cloaking everything in protection.
Yeah,
because I think a good villain kind of takes a true concept and then twists it, and that's what makes, like, Mother Gothel so effective. That's what makes, you know, some of these. And so I thought that him kind of starting out as this person who was going to protect the kingdom, but at least using that as sort of his way of manipulating the people that he was going to. It's almost like the, you know, in the Plato's Republic, the whole idea of the philosopher king, that he knows better than the people. So, you know, in not to get too esoteric, but in Plato's allegory of the cave, they talk about the philosopher kings that don't actually, what they do is they send up shadows to the people instead of actually being the real thing. And because they know best, because they're the philosopher kings. And so it's almost sort of the same idea of, like, you turn in your wishes because I know better than you and of how to live your life and what will make you happy. And I can protect you from evil and from bad things and all of that. And that's sort of the promise that he gives them. And then once that starts to unravel, he gets more and more unhinged.
Yeah, that's a really great way, I think, to frame, you know, frame this and his intentions too.
Mm-hmm.
Which, yeah, is I thought that they were interesting. I didn't mind his song. This Is the Thanks I Get. I thought it was fun, but also I kind of felt it just seemed derivative, and I'm not sure exactly of what.
Yeah. No, but I mean, I agree. I was happy that they did it, but I didn't think it 100% worked. So, you know, I guess hope they keep trying.
Well, yeah. I mean, it seemed like it was a step in the right direction to have just a full-on villain.
Yeah.
And You know, and I like what happened to him and everything, you know, all that. Yeah. So I just thought that all really
worked. It'll be a really, really hard movie to rank because it's not like offensively bad as some of the like worst of the canon are, but it's just in some ways I have a little bit more sympathy for those ones because they're like memorably bad. And it's just like, what would I rather watch? Would I rather watch something that makes like memorably bad choices and is kind of like more interesting, or would I rather watch something that's totally forgettable and bland?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. You know, it's like a hard, it's a hard, yeah. It's very, I think that this is a extremely tricky movie to rank.
Good point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I keep thinking the same thing. Like, where would I put this? I mean, I know it's going to be kind of lower tier, you know,
yeah.
Kind of lower third, but I don't know.
Yeah. And then on the same breath, somebody would watch it and be like, it was fine. And I'd be like, yeah, it was fine. But like, I would rather watch something like Hunchback of Notre Dame, which, you know, we both have our issues with. But I would rather watch that. That's just more interesting. It's got more going for it. It's more like, I like the songs better. It's just more interesting to me than this.
Mm-hmm.
So it's definitely gonna be lower than that. I can tell you that right now. But but anyway, I don't think I'm like that great or anything, but like there's a side of me that just wishes I could have a sit down with the team there and just be like, here's some feedback, some ideas. I just feel like they're just on so many levels, and we'll do our Disney ranking next month, but there's so many levels in the company that are just seem so off to me. And it feels like there's just these like little things that could fix it and make it so much better. And I and then you hear like announcements of them announcing Frozen 3 and Frozen 4, and you're just like, you're just not listening. You're not listening to what people are saying. Not just me, many people. And maybe these low, you know, critic scores and box office for some of the recent releases, maybe they'll finally listen. But, you know, just when Bob Iger made that announcement, it was just like, wow, y'all are clueless. You don't get it. That's how I feel.
Yeah. But the only saving grace for me, and I'm with you, no one's asking really for those movies, but I was happy to see that Bobby Lopez and Kristen Anderson Lopez were going to be involved, because that I honestly thought that pretty much in every song in Wish, I was just saying to myself, I wish that Bobby Lopez or Kristen Anderson Lopez had written the songs.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, no, I agree.
You know, there's that you're a, is it, I'm a star or you're a star. I'm trying to, you know, that number where,
I'm know, a star.
The,
yeah.
Where all the forest animals, you know, start talking, which is cute. The animation's cute, but, that has the weirdest lyrics, and I can't quote it, but I just, as I was hearing it,
yeah.
I thought, you know, what kid is going to sing that or enjoy that? And what are they even saying? You know, yeah. I just,
also, I feel like a lot of the Easter eggs in this movie were for the Golden Age films, which, did kids really know those films well enough backwards, forwards to know like, okay, that was the Wicked Queen. That was, I mean, when they're obvious, like, oh, this is Peter, you know, introducing Peter, and like, yeah. Some of them were obvious, but other ones I was like, I guess that's just for the parents. Cause I just don't think that, I mean, maybe most kids have seen Snow White one time, maybe twice, that they are like, oh, that's an easy.
It was for, I wonder if it was for the parents or if it was for the animators. You know what I mean? Just like the yeah. You know, the team at Disney.
Are you a fan of Rachel's Reviews? Do you look forward to Family Movie Night, Female Film Critics Panels, or the Talking Disney podcast? If so, please consider supporting the podcast by becoming a patron. As a patron, you get to access monthly events such as the watch-alongs and Q&As, where you get to talk to stars and find out the behind the scenes of the movie-making industry. And you can pick what I review for a family movie night or even become a guest on the podcast. Podcasts and YouTube channels are expensive, and I really, really could use your help. I would so appreciate it. You also get to be a member of the Facebook group where we talk about all the films that we're seeing and we have so much fun. Go to patreon.com/Hallmarkies and select one of the Rachel's fan tiers. That's patreon.com/Hallmarkies.
I have read the Art of Wish book.
Oh, really?
And I love those art of books that both
I do too.
Disney Animation and Pixar, put out. And I often will wait until after I've seen the film before. Uh-huh. But this one arrived like a month ago. I mean, I had pre-ordered it.
Interesting.
It was super early, and I just thought, well,
yeah,
I'm just going to read it because I honestly just wasn't sure how excited I was for this movie. Again, the one thing I just wanted to see the Once Upon a Time short on the big screen. That was the thing I wanted more than I wanted to see this movie. Anyway, but they were talking about kind of the heritage of this film race, or, you know, what they were aiming for. And one thing which I thought was interesting was that they were trying to make, given that it's like the origin of the Wishing Star kind of, you know, film, they were trying to make this in like a timeline, and not one of these fan made up timelines, but just like, you know, in true chronological order of when these stories possibly are happening within our own, you know, Earth timeline. That this would be clearly before Snow White, before, you know, before anything. And so they were going for that kind of a look, which I think they captured with the architecture, you know, and the design and the costumes.
And they start with the opening of the book, which was very nostalgic,
super nostalgic. And
yeah,
you know, they were using the same font in the credits that they used in Snow White. And kind of an homage to the stylistic background that happens with the opening credits of that film. So check that out on Disney Plus if you you know.
Did they talk at all in the art book about the decision to do 2D backgrounds with a CG in front?
They talked quite a bit about just a lot of that and how they were experimenting, you know, and wanting to really give the film a unique look that hailed back to classic features, but also something that really was pointing towards the future. So they had these two goals, which I think that they were only kind of partially successful. I mean, as far as the look goes, I thought the look, again, the animation art, I absolutely loved. You know, I thought it was gorgeous. It was just, it was, again, the words and the music that I had problems with.
I liked the unique look. I was talking to our friend Morgan over at Rotoscopers, and she was not a fan of it. She felt like the CG on top of the 2D was too, like, it was distracting. It kind of took her out of the experience. But it was unique enough and different enough that I didn't mind it. One little, and this is more of a nitpick, but I think it was a bit of a mistake for Asha. I would have given her a unique color that's Asha's color. Because one of the things that's so great in Beauty and the Beast, is just an example, is that she is the only one wearing blue in the home sequence. So she really stands out from the crowd, right? She's supposed to stand out from the crowd. And even in, I haven't like done a color study on Encanto, but I feel like her look is just a little bit different than the everybody else. And I feel like she's the only one that has curly hair too. But
and the green glasses and
with Asha, she really kind of blended in to the other characters and the character designs.
Yeah.
And
really
and
same color palette.
Yeah. Good point. There were a lot of other people in purple.
Yeah.
And so I don't know. I just would have had like maybe her be the only one in a pink. Something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But if you've seen that video on YouTube of the Disney and the Adorkable trope, okay, it's pretty interesting, actually. I think it's well done. It's interesting. She's talking about how she's seen a problem with all of their protagonists since Rapunzel have all been what she calls adorkable. all kind of klutzy, with the exception of Elsa, but you have Anya, who's in this sort of, you know, group category, kind of a mess, but cute and sweet and everything. And I think it's a pretty valid point that we have kind of seen that archetype a lot. That because it's like, well, they don't want to do the girl boss. I mean, unless you're Elsa, I guess. But they but they still want us to be like a strong woman. So they have her be kind of like a little bit of a klutz. And that's definitely true with Asha, for sure. I mean, one of my things about the story that, especially the second watch that I kind of realized, is that it makes absolutely no sense that Magnifico would show her the wishes. Why would she's like trying to be the intern, right? This is like an interview for her to be the intern. Like, why would he show her that? She's not even his employee. She doesn't even work for him yet. And it's the rest of the movie. It's like portrayed as this like secret place. And Valentino has to stumble upon it, you know, to like find the secret entrance and everything. So at the beginning, for him to show her the room with all the wishes makes no sense.
That first whole opening was all weird for me too, because first off, why does Asha kind of keep it a secret from her mother and her grandfather that she's got this job interview? Yeah. She's like, no, I can't bake a cake. I'm busy or whatever. I got to go see my friend. That's but a she good doesn't. Point.
You would think she'd be kind of proud of it.
Yes. And then
she's going for this interview.
Yeah. And then I'm with you. The whole interview, it felt to me like they were in a crunch for this within the story department. Like, how are we going to, you know, reveal to Asha that, you know, this is where all the wishes are, and her, you know, mm-hmm. her grandpa's not going to get his wish on his birthday. And, you know, it all in a way just seemed forced to me, mm-hmm. you know, that maybe they were trying all sorts of different things, and finally we're out of time. They're like, well, this is the one we're going to go.
Yeah. Because it doesn't make any sense for his character unless he's like not a villain at all at that point. If you're supposed to believe that he kind of descends as he starts to lose power.
Yeah.
So I was like, does he do this with all the interns? Does he take them in and be like, here are all the wishes? They're all like, here,
come, hang out in my secret lair. But don't touch that book, you know?
Yeah,
but
that's it the doesn't book. Really make sense that not only do they have the book like out, that he knows where the book is, and that it's like there for like
it's
a
in
continual
the middle
temptation.
Of the wall, you know? Yeah, I mean, like in this really prominent location.
Yeah, also kind of bizarre. I mean, I know I'm glad that he's like a villain, but it is a little strange that you have something where if he dabbles in black magic one time, there's no going back. That's it. Which is strange. Like, you should.
Yeah, that seemed like a strange provision. Like, oh, okay, well, I guess that's the end of him.
So she makes her big wish. After she doesn't get the interview. And
that song to me was only so.
Yeah, I thought
kind
it
of
was
the chorus, but
yeah, it was a good song. And Ariana DeBose is obviously a great singer.
Oh, I love Ariana DeBose. Love her.
Yeah. And it did remind me of being at D23.
Yeah, because you told me it was kind of underwhelming.
Well,
right?
It was over,
the song itself.
Yeah, but hearing her sing it live was amazing.
She's amazing.
But, it wasn't as much the song that was underwhelming, but it was the sizzle reel that they played before, which made me groan. Okay. They're like, we're the reason that people dream and wish on stars, and I'm just like, oh, come on,
rolling Disney. Your eyes.
Yeah, it was a decent I Want song. It was fine. I enjoyed it. I liked her singing.
I think that setting was spectacular.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Again, that tree that she used to, you know, wish with her dad or look at the stars with her dad, and gorgeous, you know, it was so beautiful. Yeah.
Well, so then we have the star is created, and I wish that they hadn't made Valentino talk. Alan Tudyk, yeah, forever love. He's amazing. But I really got tired of that character.
He was a difficult character too, because I'm with you. I have mad respect for Alan Tudyk. I think he's fantastic, and yeah. I love that they put him in every Disney animated film now. I love it. But yeah, this character, I mean, number one, we find out, I mean, he's only 3 weeks old, this little goat in the pajamas. And like, I kind of.
Yeah, he talks like Fraser Crane. Like, what is going on?
Yeah, I don't know. The voice didn't work, nor did the words they gave him to say. Again, just more problems with the script.
Yeah. Maybe Jennifer Lee just has too much on her plate to have done a screenplay.
Well, and she, yeah, I mean, she's got co-writing credit. You don't know how much Jennifer Lee did versus, is it Allison? Is it Allison? Is it Morris? I'm trying to remember what her last name is. But anyway, you know who I mean.
Yeah, Allison Moore, you're right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So these were some of the Easter eggs, I guess, that I noticed. I noticed, so there was obviously Thumper, homage to Thumper and Bambi. I thought the talking mushrooms were probably Fantasia. The singing squirrel, I wasn't sure what that was. Maybe I said Sword of the Stone, maybe.
Sword of the Stone, but I don't know.
The owl is obviously Bambi. Yeah.
And I wondered about the owl in Sleeping Beauty, too.
Where's the owl? Oh yeah. That she wears the coat.
That wears the coat in the forest.
Yeah. I forgot about that. Yeah. So then there's Blue with the bear.
And they were calling him John or Johnny, weren't they?
Yeah, so that was weird. Thinking, I didn't understand.
Well,
I
was wondering about Little John, you know, who also is, you know, the bear from Robin. Yeah. But.
And then there's one scene with two little mice, and I thought, well, is that a Rescuers?
I didn't know if it was Rescuers or Cinderella or both.
Oh, Cinderella, maybe Cinderella. Then obviously lots of deer. That's going to be Bambi. There's the talking trees, which I thought, oh, is that the Silly Symphonies? Maybe.
Oh yeah.
Maybe
they had that look, you know.
Yeah.
That flowers and trees short. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I mean, I know that there's in the when she's running away in Snow White, there's, you know, the scary scene. I think there's some there's some trees in that. But I just thought the way they were kind of swaying, and it kind of made me think of maybe Silly Symphonies.
Yeah.
So those are the ones I noticed, at least in that scene with.
I'm a star scene.
Yeah, I'm a star scene. I felt like that scene was the biggest as far as the Easter eggs. And then, like, of course, later on at the very, very end when he's holding the different wishes and he has Peter Pan let's see here. I didn't write it down. At the very end, he has Peter Pan, and he's like, Peter wants to go. And
right, who's literally dressed like Peter Pan, you know, in the same kind of hat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Peter wants to build a flying machine.
Yeah.
And then we find out at the end that Asha is going to be the fairy godmother.
And she gets a magic wand, or maybe the magic wand, you know, that's very similar in style to fairy godmothers.
Yeah. I mean, she doesn't look anything like the fairy godmother, but. That doesn't matter. It's fine.
She got sparkles in her dress, and that's true. Bad, you know,
about that. Yeah. I didn't really understand the obsession with chicken. Why does Disney think the chickens are so funny?
I didn't understand that either, because that whole scene, which I think was, you know, really paying homage to Be Our Guest and Beauty and the Beast with the chickens when Valentino and the star get crammed in that little, you know,
I didn't even think of that. Coop.
I mean, just given the choreography.
Yeah, I can see it.
And
yeah, I can see it.
But I'm with you. I don't understand. And then there's that one gag near the end when, you know, Asha waves the magic wand.
Yeah, so then it becomes giant chicken.
Giant. I don't know. I
mean, I think that Disney just thinks chickens are like super funny. that like kids think it's like we got Chicken Little, we have the chicken in Moana. Like they just love chickens.
They love chickens.
I guess so.
I yeah, don't get it.
Well, one comment I made this time, I don't, did you see it in 3D?
No.
I actually think it did look a little bit better. Normally I don't love 3D, but
I bet it looked nice in 3D.
Yeah, like having the layers of the animation, it just kind of helped it a little bit. Mm-hmm. So because I saw it in 3D this time.
Okay.
So I think I liked it a little bit better.
Yeah, I bet it looked really good.
What did you think of the queen, her character?
Oh, she's my favorite character.
Yeah.
She's the one who I think also has the most interesting character arc because, and I also thought too, just even though it's brief, but the guy who betrays Asha, her friend, you know, who betrays
Simon,
her, Simon, yeah. That both of them, I mean, she I really felt she loved Magnifico. The queen loved Magnifico and trusted him and was like kind of on board initially with what he was wanting to do until he went completely crazy. And
like on one hand it kind of made me laugh because I was like, oh, they just couldn't help themselves. They could not just have like a bad guy. They had to put this other character in who would be like their redemption character.
Yeah.
But I agree. It was just probably my favorite character.
So yeah.
It worked.
And I just but I liked how she interacted with Asha and the kids and and just, you know, she was beautifully animated, I thought, and I thought it really worked. And I felt the same way with, you know, I liked what that little statement when Simon was apologizing to Asha, you know, at the end, again, how he wanted to believe in the king, you know, which I think is kind of a noble thing. I mean, a good thing, you know, but when you're believing in the wrong thing or in a, you know, an evil thing, that's, you know,
yeah, so
kind
I guess
a rude awakening.
Simon wasn't included in the dabbling in black magic curse. You know, they says once you've dabbled in the black magic, you can never come back. So I guess that's not true for Simon because he was influenced by another person.
Yeah.
But it can be hard when you have somebody who's very, very manipulative
and charismatic.
And charismatic. Making promises.
Mm-hmm.
I liked that too. I thought that was pretty good. And that they were, you know, forgiving of him. Pretty much all the rest of the side characters, did not do much for me. I don't know. I mean, I guess it was kind of fun to see them be the seven dwarfs, but I didn't love them.
Yeah, you know, this art of Wish Book talks about them because again they all have names that start with the first letter of the first name of their kind of associated dwarf, and I can't remember their names per se, but anyway, the which I thought was kind of clever.
Dahlia is one.
Yeah, Dahlia, who was Doc,
right?
And the one kind of loudmouth dude, his name started with the G. He was Grumpy. You know, kind of the guy who was pretty negative. Or
like, when you just think the difference between the character work in this and in Encanto, just as an example, in Encanto, I mean, we get to know way more about Luisa, who doesn't even have that many lines. Like, it's just one song, just a few scenes, not a ton. But we get to know quite a bit about her, and she's just a side character. Even her, you know, her mother, we get to learn a little bit about, you know, and what she wants out of life and stuff. And certainly Isabella, we get to, you know, I mean, you know, when I came out of Encanto, we were talking with you and Jen and saying, oh man, that Bruno song is going to be a huge hit. That's so much fun. And I, you know, was really enjoying the characters. I could have probably told you a couple of those characters' names. I'm sure at least Isabella, I could have told you her name. I've seen it twice. I can tell you these characters' names.
So we both know Dahlia, and that's like,
Yeah, anything about them except for the fact that they were, you know, these in homage to this seven dwarfs. But yeah, they just did nothing for me, side characters, and I didn't really like Valentino.
And I appreciate what you're saying too, Rachel, in that none of the side characters had any, we didn't know a thing about them.
No.
And again, maybe that was intentional, but I thought it was, we lost out. Like, it would have been cool to know even like what their wishes were or something. You know what I mean? Like something like that. We might have gotten to know them a little better because they were, I know that they were kind of the comic relief, but except for Simon, who plays a real, you know, key part. I don't know. It didn't work
also,
for me.
Also, so her grandfather is 100 years old. Are we supposed to believe that basically he's had this big like void in his life that he can't remember because he, so he made a wish that he would be able to be a positive influence on young people, I think is what his wish was.
Mm-hmm.
And so Magnifico doesn't want to grant that wish because it's so vague. It's not specific. Whereas like the lady who wants to make beautiful dresses, that's like a specific wish that he knows the consequences are. So fair enough, but like, so that means, because it supposedly once you make the wish, then you don't have any regrets, but you don't remember.
You don't remember it. Yeah.
So he doesn't remember wanting to help youth, help people. Like, that's weird. And so has he just been this kind of like, I mean, he seems to have still been a great inspiration to Asha. So I don't know. I know I'm probably overthinking it.
No, you're not. Like, because again, I think that's the problem.
It doesn't really make sense.
There's so much of that with this script that just doesn't quite come together. And I know some of the stuff, you know, given that it's fairy tale or whatever, you might have, you know, some suspense and disbelief, but
mm-hmm.
it didn't make sense. It didn't make sense.
Yeah. Whereas like, if you think about Tangled, Mother Gothel's motivations and everything make total sense.
Total sense.
The hair makes her youthful. She wants to be youthful. She wants to, and so everything that she does is all around that motivation and what's going on and mm-hmm. what she wants. And
we'd like to take a second and thank our sponsor for this episode of the podcast. It's the Hallmarkies Merch Store.
Are you looking for that perfect gift for the postable, hardy, or Hallmarkie in your life?
What about getting that t-shirt or hoodie that will help you stand out at your next holiday party?
Now is the time to check out the Hallmarkies Merch Store.
Full of festive designs by artists like Jessica Miller, Carrie from Hallmark Comics, and more.
You can even have more than just shirts, but totes, cell phone cases, notebooks, mugs, and more.
And it isn't just Hallmark. We have designs for Anna Green Gables, Man from Snowy River, The Nanny, and more.
Every purchase at the merch store goes to help support the podcast and allows us to make the great content you know and love.
There are frequent sales, so go to tpublic.com/stores/Hallmarkies or see the link in the description.
That's tpublic.com/stores/Hallmarkies.
It was kind of fun to, you could have, I think, a fun time just trying to spot the hidden Mickeys in it. Like, for instance, when the quill
yes.
is, right. And you see, he just doesn't actually finish it, but you can tell.
It's definitely going to be a Mickey Mouse. Yeah.
That was fun. And then also in the fireworks at the end.
Oh yeah.
There was an obvious one there, but there were other ones that I saw or thought I saw, that was fun. I enjoyed that. Looking for the hidden Mickeys. Let's see, what else? Oh, it was Mary Poppins. That's the other one. So Peter Pan and Mary Poppins are the ones, the wishes.
Yeah,
that he destroys.
Yeah, Peter Pan and Mary Poppins, and then the one which should have applied to quite a few movies, I think. Wasn't it talking about was he talking about wishing upon a star generally? So much for true love. Yeah, which is,
so that's Maleficent, right?
And Ursula. Doesn't Ursula do that too?
Oh, yeah. Well, and there was very the Little Mermaid vibes with the green hands.
Yes.
That scene, obviously, when the green hands
pull out Ariel's voice. Yeah.
Yeah. Where did I write that down? Oh, yeah. The green hands reminded me of the Little Mermaid. And that this is when the queen says, I would never side with a traitor. And also that green light that reminded me a lot of Sleeping Beauty.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, with the,
yeah.
Let's see what else. Um, you almost get the feeling that he didn't even realize how powerful the wishes are when he crushes the wish, and then he's like filled with the power. And that's when he sees the star. In general, I thought the star was pretty cute. I liked it. I thought it was a cute design, and I was
surprised, because in the you know, the trailers and stuff, I just was kind of groaning. So like, this star is like right out of Super Mario World, I don't know, but it was cute. It worked for me. It worked for me.
I liked it.
And I didn't feel like that they overused it. I mean, it wasn't. Clearly, he was a main character, but I don't know. It worked. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One of the things that worked for me.
Yeah. So then there's this whole scene where they let the wishes out. And then
during Act Three, I mean, mm-hmm, during the big finale, final battle. I mean,
And so then he traps Star and he hits the queen. And Asha confronts Magnifico, and he's got this like spear power. And this is when he says, "Mirror, mirror on the wall, no more wishes. There'll be no more wishes on stars," is what he says.
Yeah. Okay.
And he says, "You are nothing." And then she says, "We are stars." So, and that's when you get the reprise of this wish with everybody, and they all have their, it's kind of a, Magnificent Seven and Bug's Life, you know, kind of a moment where all the many realize their strength over the one,
mm-hmm,
which is always nice. And I don't see anything else here. Sorry, my notes. So yeah, then they get their wishes and Simon apologizes. And then we see Peter, he wants to build the flying machine. She's going to be the fairy godmother. We get the giant chicken. The star is going to leave. And we get our ending with the book. So it was fun. It was interesting because so they have all of these gold images all over the credits of all of the animated classics.
Of many of the classic characters from all the...
I think they had everything. I mean, they even had Strange World.
Yeah, they had Strange World. If I couldn't,
they had Chicken Little. I saw.
They had Chicken Little. They didn't have the Rescuer, so everybody could be happy about that.
They really didn't.
They didn't. I didn't see the Rescuers. I didn't see the Robinsons.
Oh,
and there might have been some others, but those are two for and not that I want to have to see it again, but I think that they were missed. Maybe. Hopefully there's some
surprising.
Some great fan that that has documented this and put it out on Wikipedia or something.
Because they had Hunchback.
They had Hunchback. They had the majority.
Yeah.
I maybe I just didn't see it. I blinked or something.
Well, no, if anybody was gonna see the Rescuers, it would be you. That's crazy because that would be admitting two movies.
And I'm not sure they showed Winnie the Pooh. Did they show Winnie the Pooh?
You know, now I really wish I had written them all down.
Yeah. No, I was trying to, in my mind, go through like our canon, watch Rachel. Yeah. They had the majority of them.
Yeah. And I don't know if I saw like the Horned King. I don't know if, or.
No, Black Cauldron, I think was skipped.
Yeah. And, but the only thing about that though, and it's always risky. And where was I talking about this with, about. No, it wasn't Priscilla. It was, what was it? I was talking with somebody about a biopic. Now I can't remember what it was, but that it's always risky when you show the actual person, especially if they're like a singer, and then you're like, oh, okay. And then you have this sort of compare to of like, oh, that wasn't as good. What we've just been seeing. It's a very risky move. And that was I really enjoyed all of the flashbacks and seeing all of that, but it also kind of reminded you of all those other films.
Mm-hmm.
So in a way it was kind of risky to be like, oh, okay, I would rather be watching almost any of those films than what I just watched.
Yeah, that's exactly.
That's the only risky part of it. And but then they had it because it was the first time I saw it, I was really tired. And so I just left during the credits and I had to go to the bathroom. So I was just like, I go. And so I missed the coda, the end credit.
Mm-hmm.
And Jen told me, she was like, make sure you stay next time.
So you get to see. That was actually pretty cute.
It was very sweet. Yeah. Very sweet. To have a grandpa character, to have Saab, I think was his name, to have him playing. He doesn't sing, but he plays When You Wish Upon a Star. It was very sweet.
Yeah. I thought that. And then it just continued to play over the, you know, title cards or the studio logos. Yeah.
So that was nice. And that's it. That's Wish. And I don't know. It's an interesting one. We'll, you know, see, I guess, once it kind of shakes down and we do, you know, we should do an episode where we rank sort of the post revival. I think at this point we have enough.
Yeah.
That we could do that.
I think we should. Too. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That'd be fun.
That would be great.
Yeah. And because boy, what a weird period. And it's so interesting with Disney because they, if you look at the history of the company, about every 10 years they go through this. They have like kind of a real weak spot. And then they always come out sort of stronger at the end. So I'm excited to see, you know, what's gonna happen and how they dig themselves out of this.
Yeah.
Because I mean, if you think about it, they had, you know, Cinderella saving them in after the war years, and then they had Little Mermaid saving them after the rough 80s.
Yeah.
And then they had Tangled / Frozen saving them after the rough post Renaissance. And so they just tend to cycle like most things, I guess, in life.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, I'm still optimistic, at least I'm trying to be, about what's in store for Walt Disney Animation Studios. Yeah. You know, I saw a quote recently from Jennifer Lee, you know, who's been doing some press for Wish, just saying that, you know, they've got like 10 things in the pipeline that they're working on there at the studio, and including the two Frozen movies, you know, that we've already mentioned. But you know, you just hope that there's going to be some stuff. I think I admire that they were trying. You know, and again with a baseball analogy, they were swinging for, you know, they were swinging for the fences. It's not a home run. I also almost was wishing that they were going back to Grimm's fairy tales or something, you know, and like finding almost like a classic fairy tale, even if they heavily Disney-fy it. I mean, because this, hello, they're Disney. But
I've said that for a long time that it's a tricky one because there's some problematic elements of it, but they've never done Rumpelstiltskin. And I feel like that's sort of the big one of those Grimms that they've never done. And it's hard because the core of the story is about, you know, that the king's going to kill her if she doesn't turn the straw into gold. But then she ends up marrying him. So there's some messy stuff, but I don't know if you could work it around, but I feel like that's the big one.
They did it with the Snow Queen.
Yeah. You know,
turning it into Frozen.
Yes. So that's been kind of my one I've pitched, you know, that I think there's something there that they could do. I mean, it worked great in Once Upon a Time. Rumpelstiltskin was a lead character there. So they, and, you know, they kind of know.
You know, and I don't want to belabor the point because I know we've already talked about it, but and you know, I'm no songwriter. I hate to be critical of these people who work so hard on these things, but I just didn't like the songs and ultimately in this movie. And I just thought too that could have really improved it, even if the script were kind of the same.
Yeah. No, it's true. Because even in something that's like not great, like I'm not saying this movie is worse than Home on the Range, but I'm saying Home on the Range, the songs are actually like pretty good.
You know, I mean, I love the animation in Home on the Range.
Like Bonnie Raitt, and you know, you've got the Alan Menken, you know, score that's good. And
that great Katie Lang song, you know. Anyway,
But, so, it's It's interesting. What are you
it
gonna
is.
Do?
It's interesting.
If anybody at Disney happens to listen to this, we're available. We can provide lots of free feedback.
Would love to talk to you because, you know, as you're saying,
we love Disney. We love
Disney, and you know, I think we want them to succeed. You
yeah,
know, we
too.
Want them to you know, make these classic films that everybody loves.
Yeah.
And this is kind of a bummer. I'm not totally depressed as I have been on some, but you know, it's just
like,
it's such a rough patch.
Again, it's kind of what's worse, seeing something that's just kind of like eh, or something that's like spectacularly bad. I don't know, like I don't know. Like, is it better to watch something that's really bad, or better to watch something that's just kind of boring? I don't know. It's the question of the ages that every
it
film
is the
fan
question
faces.
Of the ages.
That's why this movie is extremely difficult to rank. Like, as I said,
yeah.
But
yeah.
But we love to hear, if you're watching, listening, what you think of this movie. Where did it rank for you? What do you think about it? Let us know in the comments or on Twitter at Disney Talking. You can find us on there, and we'd love to hear what you think. It's, you know, it's interesting that it was another one of those movies where I was like, I have no idea what people are going to think about it, and it's one of the lowest rated, critically rated movies.
The tomato meter is what,
yeah, very low,
51 at least I think I saw it today. Which,
yeah,
I think is pretty fair. I mean, that it's really split, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just,
yeah,
you know, and the audience score seemed higher. I said last I checked, was it 86 when I saw the
was
this
it?
Morning.
Yeah.
But still, it's I think it's definitely a movie that's getting mixed.
49% now.
Yeah, okay.
49%, 84% audience. So
yeah.
Yeah. But not very many audience scores yet. They'll get more coming in. So it'll be interesting by the end of the weekend.
Yeah, to see what happens over the,
on
the weekend.
One.
Well, and, you know, I don't think it's going to, and I mean, I don't necessarily like talking about box office, but yeah. It's definitely not going to be number one. I don't think they'll be lucky. I think they'll be lucky if they are at number three or four, you know?
Yeah. I think the Trolls is gonna, I mean,
oh,
I
Trolls
hated
is
that
gonna
Trolls
clean
movie,
its paw.
But I think, yeah, exactly.
And Hunger Games.
Yeah,
and
or
Hunger
even
Games.
That Thanksgiving horror movie.
Yeah,
I can see that doing well.
And
yeah,
even the Marvels, which is tanking, it might
right.
even, I mean, I wonder if it's gonna do better
yeah,
than Wish. But anyway.
It's true. Well, yeah, let us know what you think. We always love to hear your thoughts. And we have our entire playlist of all of our Talking Disney Classics episodes. So you check that out in the description. We'd love for you to take a look at all of those. And if you are listening on iTunes, please leave your ratings and reviews. That really helps us a lot. And Stanford, where can people find you?
I've got a podcast and website at moviespastandpresent.com. And follow me on Instagram. I'm at moviespap, as in past and present.
Great. And you can find me at Rachel's Reviews, all of our social media, iTunes, YouTube, and on Rotten Tomatoes. Check that out. Also, make sure that you're following Hallmarkies Podcast. Lots of fun stuff going on over there. And so we'd love for you to check that out, all the holiday reviews. And thanks so much, everybody. Well, we wish you the very best. And we'll talk to you all later. Bye.
Bye.